You're listening to Movie Sucktastic.
This is why I never do business with Italians. They're the Spics of Europe.
Sounds like some bad movie.
All right. Yet again, we are still doing it.
Slowly but surely, we are eating our way through each Oscar film.
Oh, yeah. We're almost there, too.
Yes, yes, yes.
After this, there's only two more movies.
I'm still here, and A Complete Unknown.
Complete Unknown. Now, A Complete Unknown is going digital next week, so that's a guaranteed review. Yeah. But I'm still here. Its digital release says sometime in April, which that sucks. So, I mean, there is a chance for the first time ever we don't get to review all the Oscar films unless we go to a theater to see it. But I'm still here.
Not for want of trying.
No, of course not, but I'm Still Here really isn't playing in theaters, not at least not around me anyway. So,
it's not playing near me either, yeah.
Although I think AMC plays all 10 films, they do like a two-day marathon. I just need to see one. Just one. Yeah, I'm not going to pay for a 10-day or a two-day marathon for 10 movies for one. I just can't.
Yeah.
I think we'll be okay. We could always review it later.
But those two films aside, this is Movie Sucktastic. I'm Scott. That's Joey. And this week we're reviewing The Brutalist.
The Brutalist. Yes. No AI here.
Alternate title, Doylestown.
Doylestown.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like someone should say, like, Doylestown. Going to Doylestown. Should we get the controversy out of the way first, or how do you want to start this thing?
Fine. Yeah, go with the controversy. I'm cool with that.
Now, the controversy that Scott pointed out to me, I looked it up online. Was it the editor or the cinematographer? It was somebody in the technical area. I think it was possibly the editor or the sound guy. Said that they used AI for some of the foreign language spoken parts because the accent was really hard to get down. Now, I get why they might have used it, but why the hell did you admit to it? That's just like, why would you say it? And here's the thing. So Scott and I were talking about it, and one of the things that Scott had mentioned was, and I think we actually mentioned it when we did the nominations episode, about how difficult, or it should be more difficult for Adrian Brody to walk away with an Oscar because of that AI thing. I don't agree now that I've seen the film. And the reason why is because the foreign parts are all done in voiceover. There's very little back and forths on the spoken parts in the other language between two people that speak it. There are parts where someone is speaking it by themselves. But as far as Adrian Brody goes, I think his performance, it's not hindered by it. Let me put it that way.
I just think it's cheating. That's all.
Oh, and I agree with that. I just don't know if people are going to care enough. Now, we can talk about the nominations of this film and who he's up against. We could do that because I haven't seen all the Best Actor movies yet. I haven't seen A Complete Unknown. I know Timothy Chalamet is up for that as well, but I don't know.
He's dead to me.
I wouldn't be surprised. Well, he's always been dead to you. Even when The Pianist came out and you're like, God damn, this is a good movie. God damn, it's an amazing performance. But holy crap, do I hate Adrian Brody.
Right. First of all, that was The Jacket that you're talking about.
No.
Not The Piano.
The Pianist.
I've never seen The Piano.
I've never seen
The Pianist. It was The Jacket, the film that I thought he was graded.
No, I know it was The Jacket, but I thought you had seen The Piano and reluctantly agreed. No? Okay, so it was The Jacket.
Nope, still haven't seen it.
Okay.
Yeah, I was talking about Timothy Chalamet. He's dead to me ever since Wonka, so that's all.
That's a money grab.
That's my point.
Yeah.
So, the film The Brutalist is not a biopic. It is a fictional story. It is not based on a real person, which, you know, I don't know architecture that much. So going into the film, I thought it was going to be based on a true story. So,
I had read that it was not. I didn't go in expecting it, but I did like how they kind of treated it that way. I thought that was an interesting way to do it. You know, filmed in VistaVision. Yeah.
First time since the 60s that they use VistaVision.
Yeah. And the thing is, it was meant for an IMAX screen because it had the little black bars on the side of my widescreen television. And I was like, okay, they're showing this on the tallest, biggest screen that you can.
Well, it's obvious from the beginning that this film, it's like the film insists upon itself. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is an Oscar. This is an epic. This is an epic you're watching. You're watching an epic. That's why we're filming in VistaVision. That's why we're doing our credits wacky.
Oh God, that 15 degree angle on the credits was crazy at the end. Because obviously, it was done purposely because, you know, of obviously brutalist architecture and things like that. So
not having a legitimate title card doesn't make you a better film. Please stop. I hate when they do that. It's bad enough when they hide it at the end of the film.
Right.
But we know it's a movie. You don't telling us the title of the film isn't ruining it for anybody. Please stop it. But this one, they had that weird side scroll.
Yes.
As well. Yeah. And the opening shot of Adrian Brody arriving to Ellis Island, when everything's like normal way, but when the camera pans up for the Statue of Liberty, it's upside down and sideways. It's like, yeah, okay, subtle. Real subtle.
I thought the same thing, and I'm just like, this movie's gonna have a lot of weird angles, and you know, obviously it's following that architectural. Line, you know, it's towing that line. And the score in this film is actually very, very good. I wish they used it a little bit more, but they opted to go for a more biopic-ish, more realistic, almost like you're looking through like the lens of a camera or through like, you know, like an open window. To like, you're kind of like seeing things as they're actually happening in real time, even though it's in the past. That's the approach they took to it, and I don't mind it. I thought it was actually fine. I wish they used the score a little bit more because I actually think the score is quite good. I don't think it's as good as Conclave's. I know this is the second week in a row that I've mentioned the score, but. When the score is that good, I always find that it helps the film, and it's almost like, you know, getting nominated for like a supporting actor or actress. It's like it's support. Mm. It helps, you know, and the score in this is excellent. So.
Well, I mean, it's a very accomplished film. The cinematography is beautiful. It's well written. I've got very few notes as far as the writing. I mean, the basic story is Laszlo Toth is an architect that flees Europe during the bad times, World War II, and it winds up in America. And by the way, that my criticism of the Statue of Liberty part, I'm not against an anti-America film. I just thought it was a bit too over the head in the beginning. That's all.
I mean, and as the film progresses, it's kind of important because America at this time in history was not kind to immigrants.
No,
yeah,
no,
not well, at all.
As opposed to now.
Well.
Anyway,
we're not doing that. That's a different podcast.
So he comes to America and stays with his cousin, but then or in law or stepbrother.
It's his cousin.
Yeah,
it's his cousin and his American Catholic wife, who does not like
him. Yeah,
lies to her husband, his cousin, to say that he made a pass at her, and of course the cousin is very angered by this and tells him to get out.
After the whole scene of dance with her.
Oh, I
dance,
know.
Go on, dance with her.
She's waiting for you.
I was like, what the? At that point, I thought he was going to fuck her. I was like, what the? You know,
I did too. I'm like, is he trying to get him to fuck his wife? Because.
Yeah, that's just weird. Yeah, but. So,
they all had too much to drink.
Yeah. So he eventually gets kicked out of that and starts working on the construction sites. Well, here's the thing.
When he first arrives in this country, the first place he goes is a whorehouse. and goes and gets a handy from a prostitute. And if you really...
There's two hand jobs. There are two hand jobs in this film.
Yes. One is you could partially see, and the other one is, you know, you don't see, but you just see the facial reactions. But when he first gets there... He opts for the handy, and there's a guy across the room, you know, fuck her, and he's like, shut up. And obviously, he's trying to stay true to his wife by just getting the handy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he's thinking when he's doing that.
And I know that's what the scene is supposed to impart, but, you know, do it another way. I don't know. I'm tired. I'm just tired of penis in my movies.
I don't know. It's like you think that's a prosthetic in that scene, or that's part of Adrian Brody going on there?
Oh, definitely a prosthetic. Definitely prosthetic, but still too much penis. I'm just.
I mean, you don't see a ton of it. That's the thing. It's got clever angles so that you don't actually see, you know, like hand and penis too much.
I just. I feel like a prude complaining about this stuff. I do. So I'm going to leave it alone.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but while he's working with his cousin, that's when he first meets Guy Pearce's character. And,
well, his cousin has a furniture shop and they make furniture. Right. And, you know, they're also, you know, a contracting business as well. So if you want something made or you need cabinets, shelves, whatever, they'll do it for you. And Guy Pearce's son comes to him and says, listen, our father's away. We want to build him a proper library and we want to surprise him. So they go and they start the job. And then Guy Pearce shows up on the job with his sick mother and just throws a fit like a baby, like an actual child, kicks them out, doesn't want to pay them, you know, it fires them, quote unquote. And fast forward, you know, I think it was a few years later?
Yeah, it was years later.
It was years later. Because the first part of the film is 1947 to 1953 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's because the film was done in two parts, a part one and a part two.
I have a personal problem with the Guy Pearce character.
Okay.
All right, so, and I used to live around the Doylestown area, so I'm familiar with Doylestown. Obviously, there is no monument there, but the thing that bothers me about the Guy Pearce character is that his name is Harrison Lee Van Buren, and they named the family Van Buren so it would kind of have links to the president of that time period and just show, you know,
show implication the wealth of and the, you know, the personification of power and. Yeah.
Right. However, my mother's side of the family is Van Buren, and the Van Buren the Van Burens even had a house in New York State. The Van Buren, I don't know if it exists anymore, but like there were like four Van Buren brothers, and they lived out there, and that's during the time period of this film. There actually was a Van Buren family. Yes, that was actually was. I don't know how wealthy they were, but they had a big house, so they had some money. So it just kept bugging me that they I'm being linked to this guy.
Well, I mean, but yeah, I know. I get it.
And And the middle name Lee is a family middle name on my mother's side of the family. I know. And it wasn't that bad to begin with, but once we get into the second act.
Oh, yeah, that scene?
we'll get there.
We'll get there.
Yeah, but he throws a fit, throws him out, and then his brother throws him out, or cousin throws him out. So then he ends, and he's strung out on heroin.
Yeah, he becomes a heroin addict. So he becomes a heroin addict, and he befriends someone that he met.
Gordon. While,
right, and he's also a heroin addict, so they're doing that together.
Mm-hmm.
And, the thing is, it's years later, he's working, he's shoveling coal. And,
living in shelters.
Yeah, and Guy Pearce comes to see him, and because he did some
because the library he built for them, that they built for him, is like in magazines now. It's famous, and yeah. he didn't realize at the time that Laszlo Toth was a world famous architect before the war.
Right, exactly. So, you know, he goes and he finds him. He finds a lot of his other work. He brings him a folder so he can look at it. He's very emotional by it. Laszlo is very emotional by it. He's crying, you know, because it's obviously a memory into his previous life. But mm-hmm. Harrison, he basically tells him that when his mother died, which was that weekend, the weekend, you know, after he kicked them out, he wants to build a monument to her, but have all of these things, like a chapel and a gymnasium.
Like a community center.
Yeah, he wants it right in Doylestown, and he wants him to build it. And he tells him he could live on the property. You know, like, at first, you feel that this character is very, you know, very sympathetic and wants to help him and actually does these things.
But they always have little clues that he's an asshole.
Always.
There's always a little, he can't help himself by a little saying things here and there where you're like, oh, yeah, okay, you're a dick.
Well, I mean, that was now, what the introduction to the character is like, wow, this guy's a fucking piece of shit. This guy's what an asshole. But then
mustache.
Yeah. But then he comes back and he tells him and he's actually quite nice and tells him to live on a property. Anything you need. I want you to do this. You know, he does all of these things. But like you said,
even helps him get his wife right. into the country.
He introduces him to his lawyer who then speeds up the process of getting her back,
mm-hmm.
which still takes a while, but it's a lot faster than her trying to get there.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
So a lot of this film is about the immigrant experience coming to America and also the immigrant experience of those escaping the Holocaust, escaping the war. But there's also the dynamic of the when he starts living on the
property
Van Buren estate. Yeah, in Doylestown to work on the community center, you get this kind of rich man poor man dichotomy where you know it's more transactional than everybody lets on. And I actually started getting flashbacks to Saltburn during the those portions of the film.
I actually didn't see that film yet. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but I know...
Bump that up on your list.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So I have a film, you know, Saltburn, when it came out, trailers and all, it's like, you kind of got the sense like, wow, they're going to nominate the shit out of this, and nothing. They did nothing with that movie.
That was one of those films that there was a lot of buzz about it, and then nobody got nominated for it. Yeah, but I just bump it up on your list.
Bump it up?
Okay. Yeah, but you just get this feel like that scene later on where the brother tells him when he's drunk, he's like, yeah, you know, we just tolerate you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's this whole thing of where like, yeah, you're not really welcome, even though we act like you're welcome. And this kind of rift between the two of them. He gets fired. They stop the project at one point because there's a like an Atlas Shrugged type train disaster.
Yeah. So, you know, they were. Two people potentially
injured,
potentially may have died, lawsuit, and Harrison decides to stop the project and tells Laszlo to, you know,
fuck off.
Yeah. Pound sand.
Yeah.
Go somewhere else.
Then you have that. There's the next time gap.
Yeah.
right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That it then goes into part two. But mm-hmm. we have to go back a little bit in part one because the scene the scene where the son tells him that he tolerates him and mm-hmm. he also tells him about his niece who is taking care of his wife who has osteoporosis and she can't walk very well. So she's,
yeah, and the niece is a psychosomatic mute.
Right, which is cured later. She can talk later, but...
Well, at the end, of, yeah, we're talking years down the road.
It's,
yeah,
yes, but. It's actually in part two when they end up in New York. But before right. that, the son, after he talks to him about how the niece is bothering people or disturbing people, like she's not talking, so he might have was making it up or just was just trying to get something out of Laszlo. He kind of says something along the lines of like, listen, man, it's not like I'm trying to get my prick into her. Right.
Yeah.
He does that.
And then he,
and then he goes and he takes a visit. Like she was obviously swimming in the lake that's there
mm-hmm.
or the creek. And he goes over and he sits down next to her and starts talking to her. And of course she's not talking. But then the next shot after that is both of them walking towards where Harrison and Elizabeth, they're all sitting down. They're all having kind of like an outdoor, just a, almost like a picnic, so to say. They're just kind of lounging and just talking and laughing. Mm-hmm. But she's like fixing her outfit as she's walking there. And he's like 10, 20 feet behind her, still stumbling.
He sexed her.
Yes. But here's the thing. Yeah. It's... He realistically forced himself on her.
Yes.
And she obviously. Probably didn't try to stop him, you know,
right.
because she was yeah. trying to be respectful to her uncle and her aunt.
Or out of fear.
Yeah. Or I was getting to that too. So it's like, you don't know exactly what happens. You just know that she doesn't say anything. Mm-hmm. But I think that plays a part into the end of the movie. You know, and we'll get to that when we get to that part of the film.
Okay.
You know, because of what Harrison is accused of.
But yeah, he definitely sexes her, although they leave it vague in the film. And I do appreciate that, too. I like a film that doesn't feel the need to actually tell us everything. I mean, you figured it out when you saw them walking back.
Of course.
It's not.
Well, and the thing that's is, too,
good screenwriting.
In part two, where she's now talking... And she has a husband, and she's mm-hmm. pregnant. I'm like, has it been 7 or 8 months? I'm like, I didn't know if they were going to go that way with the story, and they clearly didn't because enough time had passed that.
Yeah, I was waiting for that myself. Believe me. Yeah, I thought that might pop up.
But then you realize that you know part two is what was part two? It was like 19.
It's like 50-something to 60, I think.
Yeah, it was like 1950. I think part one was 47 to 53, and then part two is 53 to 60 or something like that. I apologize for not getting those exact dates, but that's the time.
So the second part happens years later when Laszlo's working as a draftsman.
In New York City. They had moved to New York City at this point.
Right, but Harrison has his people track him down and ask him to come back and finish the community center.
Right,
and he says he wants them to fly out to Italy with him to choose the marble for the altar. And
yeah.
and that's where we get some. The two times I shouted out during this film were both in Italy. Twice I found myself going, oh.
And I imagine the first part, the first time was what's in the opening of our show?
Yes.
Yeah, you bastard.
did not expect that. I can't.
No. And I'm like, I'm watching in the opening of the show, which I never do, actually. But Scott had mentioned to me that he had made an alternate cut to the opening. I was like, all right, man, I'll check this out. And I watch it. And I'm like, you son of a bitch.
I'm sitting at work yesterday and I'm going through the film in my head and I just stop and say, wait, I got to use that line.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say the line either.
But no.
It's in the beginning. Rewind the episode.
It's in the beginning. It's in the opening.
Yeah, but so they go to look at Marble, and then they go up partying, and they both shoot up heroin, and then and then Harrison rapes Laszlo.
Well, first Laszlo is dancing with another woman. He's kissing her, but like in the beginning of the film, he decides that he's not going to do anything with this woman because he is married. He does love his wife. At the beginning of the film, he doesn't actually even know if she's alive yet at that moment. So he's thinking, she could be alive, so let me just get the handy. And then later in the film, when he's in Italy, he's like, you know what? Making out with a chick is good enough. So he then wanders off, and Guy Pearce, Harrison, he's looking down, like he's up above. You know, another shot of where it's like he's above everyone. He's more important. He's better than you. He has that shot where he's up there. And, you know, I don't know if they intended to portray that, but with how detailed this movie is, yes, they absolutely did. So then he sees Laszlo leave, so he decides to follow him. And as he walks out into the side streets of this Italian village, he tells Laszlo, he goes, it's time for us to go. So-and-so is setting us up for the night, somewhere to sleep, blah, blah, blah. And then he hears just like things in the background. At that point, I actually thought he was going to get attacked or something possibly violent was going to happen. But then he follows him down like a corridor. He follows the sound and he just sees Laszlo just
like in an alley,
just strung out on his side. Just he is fucked up.
And then he proceeds to put the rapist in philanthropist.
And then Guy Pearce, Harrison talks to him. And as soon as he grabbed that belt buckle, I'm like, oh no. Oh,
yeah,
no.
That was, I remember the minute he grabbed the belt. I was like, oh, this is happening. Yeah, this is happening. He raw dogs him while saying things like your people bring it on themselves. It's like, holy shit. He's like, what,
because you think you're beautiful? You know, it's like all kinds of, it's like, you bring it on yourselves. Like, holy shit.
Well, I mean, and Harrison's character brings it up in the first part of the film, how like he doesn't have a talent, but so he's like, he doesn't say envious, but I don't think he does. But like that envy of people that are able to do stuff that he appreciates is obviously ratcheted up a bit in this scene, and along with his, you know, and you know, which I'm assuming is partly an inferiority complex for someone who sees themselves as such a big man. Yeah. You know, masculinity bullshit.
Well, and the thing is, you kind of don't know if the character is, if he is gay, and he obviously can't tell anyone that he has a problem with it, or was this just another power move to show how much more powerful he is, even though the act of what he's doing, he doesn't normally do or doesn't do at all, but that he just, because he was so strung out on heroin, I don't know. And, you know,
does it matter?
It doesn't. But the thing, what I'm getting at is the how powerful he perceives himself or not over people. Like you had mentioned, the screenwriting for this, it was very, very good. They didn't have to hit you over the head with a hammer to do it. It was subtle in most cases during this film, but if you can follow a movie and you're a smart film goer, you'll see it all. You know, you won't have any problems following this, even though it's 3.5 hours long.
Oh, yeah.
I will say this though, for a 3.5 hour film, I did watch it over two nights. I thought it moved okay. I didn't feel like I was like, shit, this thing isn't over yet. I didn't have that reaction during all of this film. And it was probably because I did it over two nights. But I did not feel like it dragged a lot.
I did it in one sitting because I'm a professional. Okay. And
wow. Okay, Harrison.
And but I agree with you.
Well, thank you.
I'm saying, yeah, but yeah, the film, it even though it is a 3.5 hour film, you know, like 3:10 with credits.
3:21, it's less, or I should say it's more, I would say, They did a lot of credits in the beginning, so the end credits weren't as long as it could have been.
It's still like 10 minutes worth of credits, I'm convinced.
I didn't watch them all.
Okay, but anyway, well, I'm just saying is like is the film it is the film writing and the acting. I mean, Adrian Brody, as much as I don't care for him, he is good. He's an intense actor. If the role has intensity involved, he is going to nail it.
Yeah.
And this is a very, and Laszlo Toth is a very intense character, emotionally, and he pulls it off. Guy Pearce plays a great dick, right? You know, I don't know really how to, I you know, best actor, best supporting actor. Don't know, but
how about we do the nominees real quick?
Well, do we want to? There's nothing really else to wrap up in the film after it. It all goes downhill after the rape sequence, as far as I'm concerned.
There isn't too much left of the movie after that scene. Maybe half an hour, something like that.
Yeah. Basically, Elizabeth is having severe pain issues with her legs, so osteoporosis.
He shoots her up because she's out of pills. So.
Right, so they both have like heroin induced sex, and during it he confesses everything that's happened, including Harrison taking him from behind, and she overdoses. He runs her to the hospital, and that's when they both decide they're going to go to Israel. There's like, fuck America, this place is shit.
Yeah,
I'm paraphrasing, but that's roughly what they say. It's like, fuck this place, we're going somewhere that we're actually wanted. And but before they go, Elizabeth goes to the Harrison estate while they're all sitting down for dinner and just comes out and says,
but importantly, she walks in. She
She has a
it's a walker. Right. She has a walker, but she walks in. She doesn't go in with a wheelchair, which again is another smart way. You know, she could always walk. It's just very difficult for her. So showing a scene where she walks in, even with the assistance of a walker, she is walking in there. You know, she is not going to be looked down upon because she's going to be standing. She's going to be looking at you. So,
and remember, he is in a sitting position that entire scene. She is above him. Other people stand up and like the son stands up. Some people stand up. He remains seated that entire time. He is beneath her.
Yeah. And so when she accuses him, she basically says, I'm going to tell you all something and it's going to be very hard to hear. And she tells the whole room that Harrison is a rapist and that he raped her husband. The son.
She didn't say raped her.
She says it like twice. He is a rapist.
Okay, that's right. The first thing, but like at first, the way she reveals it is like, he's a rapist. It's like, how are you? It's like, he didn't rape me.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh.
Raped my husband. Yeah.
And what I like too is that he doesn't even say it to to Harrison. He says it to the son. She says it to the son. It's like, your father is a rapist.
Right. And I think there's a double meaning there because the son. Mm-hmm. Also a rapist. And it almost, and I don't know, I might be reading it wrong, it almost alludes, because the son is very angry, like very angry, like how dare you. So you can take it as one way, it's like, this is my hero, what are you saying? Or,
oh, obviously, yeah. Or, but he also knows.
Right. Or Harrison was not very good to him, possibly raped him when he was younger, and those emotions are coming out, because as he's running around the house, father, it's over now, it's over now. You know what I mean? Almost like
it's a family secret. A family secret. Right. That's what it is. So it's one of those things where no one talks about it, so it's not, and having it exposed is like that big of a deal.
Right.
So you never see Harrison get up. He's just there, and then after the son manhandles the gimp.
Yeah, he throws her down and drags her into the other room.
Just dragging the handicapped woman across the floor.
And then, of course, the daughter, his sister, is like, I'm so sorry. It's like she's like beside herself because she knows that the men in her life, they are wrong, you know, and in a big, big way. So obviously the daughter helps her, gets her out, you know, to a taxi. She leaves, but now they're looking for the father, which, by the way,
which also reminded me of Saltburn.
Okay, I'm going to have to watch this now. You've mentioned it twice.
I really feel like the film, I really would have liked a Saltburn ending to this film, but I digress.
So, but you don't find the father. You don't find Harrison. They go look for him, and they look for him, and they don't find him. The scene ends in the chapel looking up at the ceiling with the sun coming in, because that was Laszlo's design. When the sun comes into the building, it would create a cross in the middle of the floor.
But like in the opening of the film, the cross is upside down when the camera pans up.
Yes.
Yes. Now, yeah, they do leave it open-ended. They leave it vague and don't really say what happened to him. But the implication is that he went and killed himself.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah, and I believe, and I usually don't do this because I don't believe the film has to stand on its own merit. But I read that in an earlier screenplay, they did find him, like he drowned himself in the fountain.
Right, which is like the basement area. There's all water in there, and that's initially how I thought they were going to find him, but they didn't.
Yeah, but honestly, the search scene goes on way too long for me without a resolution. It went on too long for me.
It did go on a long time. And when they didn't resolve it, I'm like, okay, I see what they're doing. I don't agree, but it didn't take away from it too much. No.
It's minor quibble.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that's the movie. Do we want to do nominations, then rate it?
And then at the end.
Oh, yeah.
And then at the end, the epilogue. The epilogue is the big reveal is that he built the whole community center to look like a concentration camp.
Correct. Yeah, he wanted one big room, all that stuff.
And you know what? I am not into architecture, so I don't have a dog in this hunt. I know my wife refused to watch the film because she does not like brutalist style. Her complaint was, it's a box. So,
well, here's the thing. And I love Holly. You know I do. But this movie's 10% architecture, so...
It's not good enough. More than 10% architecture. Okay, maybe it's a good 40%.
It's not that much. It is nowhere.
It is nowhere near
that much.
I disagree.
The architecture angle of this movie isn't what this movie really is.
Really? How long do we watch them build the library? How long do we watch? It is a major part of the film.
Yes, but it's not enough to avoid watching it.
That's up to the individual.
That's all I'm saying. It's not enough.
Some people would say 3.5 hours is enough to say no.
True.
I'm not one of them.
True.
But I mean, again, you know, this film wasn't made for everybody.
No,
it was made for the Oscar. It was made for the Academy.
Yeah. They're eating it up. So
now, and I apologize. I stepped on you there, but you said you wanted to rate it.
Well, what do you want to do? You want to do nominees, then rate it?
Let's just rate it first, then we'll talk about the nominees.
Okay. So it currently is sitting at, 7.9.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with an 8. Couldn't go lower than a 7. Certainly nothing.
I'm okay with a 7, but I'm okay with a 7, but if you want 8, I'm okay with an 8 too, because it is a well-made film.
Well, I'm trying to think of, in comparison to other movies, not just nominated, just other movies, like how well made this film is, how well acted is, how good the script is. I think a 7 might be too low.
As far as a 3.5 hour like long films go, I enjoyed this much more than I enjoyed Oppenheimer.
Let's go 8 then, because I think we gave Oppenheimer an 8.
I'll give it an 8.
I'm almost positive we gave Oppenheimer an 8.
Give it an 8. That's fair. I think that's fair.
All right. So let's do some nominees here real quick.
What we got?
So it's nominated for original score. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while it's good, I think Conclave is better. I don't know what I'll pick on Oscar night. But other nominees are Conclave, Emilia Perez, Wicked, and The Wild Robot. So, honestly, I think score is probably going to be between Conclave and this. Best picture?
Yeah.
I don't think the other three.
No. I'm not arguing with you.
Best picture?
No.
It's nominated for best picture. I don't think it wins. Well, I think it's one of the top ones.
It's definitely in the top five.
I think it's the front runner, to be completely honest. I think on every single list, it's the front runner to win Best Picture.
That's why I don't think it's going to win.
Well, we'll see on Oscar night. But obviously, I mean, I think it has, I mean, I keep hearing Anora for Best Picture as well. I just don't know. Mm-hmm. Like I said,
Conclave won Best Picture in the BAFTAs.
It did.
Keep that in mind.
It did. So it's like, that's why when we first started this, when we did the nominations, I'm like, I have no idea what's going to win what. Like, for the first time ever, I just don't know. I really don't know. I think this is going to be one, a year where I do very, very badly on my ballot. I really do.
What are the other categories?
Directing. It's up for directing. And the other films are Anora, Complete Unknown, Emilia Perez, and The Substance.
I think it's got a good shot at that.
I think it wins Best Director just because of the scale of this film.
But you think it's going to be a split?
I mean, I think I think it might be. I think directing and then picture to something else. Yeah, I think it might split. Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role. Adrian Brody. Let's take a quick look of who he's up against.
Timothy Chalamet, Coleman Domingo, Ralph Fiennes, and Sebastian Stan.
Ray Fiennes.
That's what I said.
You said Ralph.
They have Ralph, and the list I got, it says Ralph.
Yeah, that's how he spells it.
Then that's how I'm pronouncing it.
And dude, I'm with you. I really am. But for the last 30 years, the fucking dude, it's like Ralph Fiennes. Like, it's Ray. It's like, what? It's spelled Ralph. It's like, I don't fucking care. I'm saying, I'm with you. Here's the thing.
I thought he was okay in Conclave, but I don't know. Best Actor.
Yeah, you know what? If they really have a problem with the AI, I think Timothy Chalamet walks away with it this year.
Ugh, yeah, biopics, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, you know, poor Sebastian Stan, you know they're not giving him an Oscar for playing Donald Trump because that guy.
No.
I did watch a little bit of it because I have it in my collection, so I always watch a little bit just to see, make sure, the sound is good, the picture is good. He fucking nails it. And I'm like,
I've heard a lot of good things about it. Yeah,
definitely. He fucking nails it. So, all right. And then best actress in a supporting role. And you know what? She might walk up. Felicity Jones might get her first Oscar this time around. Because, you know, Zoe Saldana is not getting it. Not for that movie. Ain't happening. Isabella Rossellini, you know, the bag of sand.
5 minutes of screen time.
Well, that doesn't matter. It really doesn't.
It matters to me. It matters to me.
Oh, it matters to me too, but it doesn't matter to the voting. But she does nothing. I still don't know how she's nominated. Ariana Grande for Wicked? No. Monica Barbaro? Haven't seen A Complete Unknown yet, so I don't know. I think Felicity Jones is going to walk away with this one this year. I really do.
Yeah.
Then you got Guy Pearce for Best Supporting Actor.
No. He didn't do poorly, actor in but...
supporting role. You got Yura Borzov for Anora, Kieran Culkin for A Real Pain, Ed Norton for A Complete Unknown, Guy Pearce for The Brutalist, and Jeremy Strong for The Apprentice. I will say this. Jeremy Strong in The Apprentice is excellent. So if I had to guess right this second, it might be Ed Norton or Jeremy Strong, because Ed Norton is way overdue as well.
I think Kieran Culkin takes it.
I hope so. I like him.
I watched.
Who knew he was going to be the good Culkin?
Yeah, I watched A Real Pain, and he was good in it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Best original screenplay. Best original screenplay. Let's see.
Anora. It's up against Anora, A Real Pain, September 5th, and The Substance.
Oh, God, I hope The Substance gets it. I really
yeah,
do.
Yeah, me too.
I
me
really
too.
Do. Cinematography. What's up on cinematography? Here we
go. I got you.
The Brutalist. Okay. Oh, Dune Part 2, Emilia Perez, Maria, and Nosferatu. You know what? Have you seen Nosferatu yet?
I just watched it yesterday.
Very impressive on the cinematography. Yes. And I really enjoyed the film.
I did too. Too much penis.
Listen, Dracula's well endowed. What could I say?
I apparently.
Film editing. That's always
your
a
guess
toss
is as good as mine. Yeah,
who knows? It's a technical. So, what's it up against?
Anora. Oh, here it Conclave. Is. Anora, Conclave, Emilia Perez, and Wicked.
You know what? Wicked might get it. It's big budget. They're not gonna. It, yeah. Wicked is not gonna win a lot of Oscars. So, and mm-hmm. then production design. Where is that?
That's a hard one. That's a hard one. They've got. It's up against Conclave, Dune Part 2, Nosferatu, and The Wicked.
Ooh.
That's a hard one because those all these films have like great production design. They're
I know.
I think Conclave is the less at least amount.
Yeah. Dune Part 2, I mean, this is the second time in a row. I mean, you don't change anything when you do the sequel because it's a continuation of the first film. You know what? Maybe Nosferatu walks away with it. Maybe.
That'd be interesting.
It would.
Everyone loves Eggers.
You know what his next film is? He's doing Werewolf, but it's set in the 11th century, like the 1200 AD.
Yeah, but it's werewolves.
Listen, it's set in 1200 AD. Or 14.
As long as he's
AD.
Not remaking another film. As much as I like Nosferatu, I'm tired of these directors remaking fucking films. Stop it.
Yeah, no, this is going to be a long time ago. So
okay,
he does that well. So I'm interested.
It's his thing.
Yeah, I'm interested. So those are the nominees. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So got an 8 on this. It was very good film.
Better than I expected, thankfully.
Same here. So
a little rapey.
A little bit.
Just a tad.
So we have some news for the show. Yep. And normally I would just say this during the end credits, but I think this is big enough to actually mention before the end credits. And then we also have an email from a listener, so we'll read that. But the big
now
news...
Now the email's working.
Yeah, well... It was only working on the website. Now it just works, so...
Okay.
Sorry. excuse me. So anyway, the big, big news is that the podcast is now on Spotify. I've been trying to get it on Spotify.
Look out.
Okay.
Look out, Joe Rogan.
Okay. I've been trying to get this thing on Spotify for a year now, and it turned out that I needed to make a lot of edits to the RSS feed, the XML coding that's in there, because I wrote it, 16 years ago. So there was a bunch of things in there that don't work like they did then now. So I was able to fix all of those things, and sure enough, Spotify accepted the podcast, and all 438 episodes, including this one, 438 episodes are on Spotify. And all you got to do is just do a search for us there. Everything shows up, and people are already listening to the show because statistics and analytics are all built in, which is kind of nice. So yes, the show is now on Spotify.
If you're listening to us on Spotify, welcome aboard.
Yes, thank you very, very much. All right, so we have an email from a listener. We're going to read this real quick. And it's from Joey P. And has a subject line of Hooked. It reads, "When I first heard your show on YouTube, I was a little apprehensive. We have a lot of movie reviews and discussion available, and many are kind of dumb. You get the big players who put up a slick production on in their spare oversized closet. They tend to lose material and focus on movie news after a bit. What I like about your stuff so far is that it matches the conversations I hear at my local music and movie store, Cheapo Records. I want to go to Cheapo Records. Where is it? I'd love to go there. The place sounds cool. I am unsure how you get some opinions, but it meshes. Keep it up. Your podcast comes off like a conversation. The audience wants to join in or wants to join. I'm hooked. Sincerely, Joey P. Thank you, Joey. We appreciate your email. And yes, that is the intention of the show. Scott, we've known each other since we were teenagers, and that's why our back and forth is the way it is, because, you know, it's just easy to talk to each other and talk about movies. And whenever we would hang out, we would just do this anyway. So we decided to record it and put it out there.
And Joey.
Yes.
Joey P.
Yes.
Even I don't know where some of my opinions come from. So I understand.
Exactly. But yes, thank you for the email.
And thank you, YouTube people who are watching the show, because originally it was just a podcast on iTunes. And thank you for any, if you're listening and you're joined the conversation, that's all we really care about.
Yeah. No, you know, and on our website, I kept the video there. Suggestions are always welcome for us to review things.
Oh, God, yes.
I mean, you know, when we announce, hey, we're taking suggestions, we usually end up with a good 5 to 10 movies, and we tend to kind of review most of them. You know, so listen, we have that wheel of suck where we got a few hundred movies on there, but if you got a movie we haven't reviewed yet and you want to hear us talk about it, we'll consider it and probably do it. So,
just ask Gino.
That's right. All right. So let's go ahead and end the show.
Yes,
let's
sir.
Let's do that. All right, everybody. As always, thank you for joining us for yet another episode of Movie Sucktastic, episode 438. I just very recently moved our website from one hosting service to the other. I think you'll see a big difference. Everything is moving a lot smoother, and email works again. So go to our website at moviesucktastic.com, where you can listen to the show. You can download the MP3 to put on your phone or device or whatever you're using. And you can click on a link. It'll take you to the YouTube video of this episode and any of the others that we've done right from the website. You can also get all the links on the website to take you to those places as well, like Spotify and Amazon Music and iTunes and so on and so forth. You can go to iTunes directly and you can listen to the show there as well. Or you can go to facebook.com/moviesucktastic and you'll see everything we've been posting there. You want to leave us email. It's just like Joey P did. You go to, just write us an email at themovieguys@moviesucktastic.com. If you want to leave us voicemail, which we will play on the show, you're going to call 908-514-4470. And if you want to download a podcast player, you can go to moviesucktastic.com/mst.apk. You can download our podcast player. We really do need to redesign it, but it does work. Or just download your favorite one. Doesn't matter. Just download your favorite one and do a search for Movie Sucktastic. We show up. All the episodes are there. Do you have any words of wisdom, Mr. Wilson?
This is why I don't work with Italians.
Yeah, just going with that part? Okay.
That's the only part I'm going with.
That's the only one? Okay. It's probably a smart move. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you next week when we review A Complete Unknown.
Yes.
All righty. Talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.